call to order the meeting of the executive committee of the board. We have our agenda here that includes the AAC and you.
Approve the agenda? A second?
Second.
Right?
I can't do that.
You can't. Oh, you, no, approving the agenda. The agenda, yeah.
I'll second.
Yep. Right. Yeah, can you, oh, here she is, right. So, second to approve, all in favor of approving the agenda? Aye.
Aye.
We have a certification, which I'll ask Mr. Downs to take care of for an executive session we had of this executive committee.
I move that the board executive committee certify to the best of each member's knowledge and with no individual member dissenting that at the meeting of the executive session on December 18, 2014 of the board executive committee, only such matters as are authorized for discussion in executive session under board bylaws, Article 10, and only those matters identified in the notice by which the executive session was convened were heard, discussed, or considered by the executive committee. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed?
Thank you.
Could you record an extension?
Yeah, you weren't here. Right. And we also need to approve the minutes of that meeting, the December 18th meeting.
So moved.
Second? All in favor?
Aye.
And an abstention?
Aye.
That brings us to our conversation with the AAC on the many subjects that we're continuing to collaborate on. I have a list here, but I think you all have the same list, and I'll go in whatever order you think is appropriate. And I've postponed the start of the board meeting to a target of 1:15, so hopefully we have at least a half hour to converse here.
No, we'll be brief. The two major safety issues, and they're really important safety issues. One, there is a safety poster posted at the middle doors on every train.
Yeah.
They changed it. They made it larger font, which is wonderful, so I can read it from across the car, but they took the wheelchairs off.
I'm sorry. Oh.
There is no mention of wheelchair evacuation on that poster. There are baby buggies. There are carry-ons, bulky items, but nowhere is there mention of wheelchairs the way there used to be one that said, if you are in a mobility device, stay in place and staff will come and evacuate you or something. And I think that poster needs to be
there amended. Are several reasons why that poster needs to be reviewed. I've had that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things. I mean, after January 12th, I devoted most of my rides on Metro to looking at that poster, and there's a lot of things that jumped to mind, and that's clearly an important one.
Now,
there's another on there that says if you need to communicate, use the communications device. It doesn't tell you where it is.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't tell you it's at the other end of the car, so I've asked the folks in the agency to top-to-bottom review of that poster.
Okay, that's super. The other thing...
Could I say
please.
On behalf of the board, we apologize for the insensitivity of that, and our commitment would be to you that we will correct that as quickly as possible. It's an unacceptable oversight on the part of our authority, and it was not intentional and not for any reason that would be legitimate.
Could they come to us and let us look at it before it goes out?
That's why it's supposed to be. You're here and we're here.
Right. Good. Okay. I figured the answer was yes, but thought of that.
Kathy, you want to say something?
No. I just wanted to confirm what we're saying is that it is the adopted procedure that it be that those things be reviewed by the AAC. AAC.
AAC.
Yeah.
The other thing is a banner that I've been carrying ever since the start of the 7000 series car. The only accessibility item on the 7000 series car that our committee didn't get was the location of the wheelchair parking spaces. And once again, on those cars and all the current cars, the mechanism for opening the center doors for evacuation are directly above the wheelchair parking spaces. And so should there have been a wheelchair on any of those cars that had to be evacuated, people would have been climbing over that wheelchair. to get to that device to open the doors. And if we change the poster to what it used to be, that all wheelchairs should stay in place, that's right at the main exit from the car. And I beg again that the wheelchair parking spaces should be at the ends of the cars, not at the middle door. We don't permit bicycles at the middle door. Why should we put wheelchairs, a bulky item, that's right in front of the mechanism for opening the door? Right now, or on the older cars, there's still the seats there. So if a short individual has to open that door, they can actually step up on that seat. They can't step up on the wheelchair person. So that was the other safety issue that we were really troubled about, is location of the wheelchair parking on the cars, that they should be at the ends, not in the middle in the route for evacuation.
Patrick?
The other safety issue that I think has come up that we've discussed at AAC, and I think you'll probably hear it from the RAC also, is in dealing with the cell coverage within the tunnels. We talked about it in the past. I know it's been on the news. AAC thinks that it feels that it's a safety issue. Whatever we can do to get that moved up on the schedule to improve cell coverage within the towers, I think is important. For a wide range of disabled people, that's about the only kind of coverage you'll have, particularly if you're deaf or deafblind.
Yeah. I would say from the conversation that I am as frustrated as anybody about the slow pace of getting something in place that was ordered by the Congress in 2008. The entity that was created to do that, unfortunately, has gone bankrupt. But we've said, get with those people, get with those carriers. We want to have that service in place. It has a variety of needs, but the safety need is an important one. And I'd like to know that it's going to happen soon. I can't guarantee it's going to happen soon. But we're going to do everything we can.
And then the last two things is one, to thank everybody for what you've done with the budget. And we do have two budget questions for you. One is, there was the comment that there may be some changes to the capital budget. And the thing that our group worries about on capital is the lighting project.
Yeah. There's nothing in this solution that was cobbled together. Nothing is being removed from the capital program. What's being recognized is some things are moving more slowly than anticipated. If they're moving more slowly, they need less cash in the coming year. But literally nothing. When we adopt the capital budget, it will be for all the things we need. So there's no item that's on the...
So you're moving to a just-in-time process rather than...
Yeah, that's good.
And then the last budget item...
Suggestion about the question that you could ask. Is there anything in the capital slowdown that would impact the timing of the lighting project?
Mm-hmm.
You could ask this.
You could ask that.
Okay.
And I wouldn't have the answer to that. But
right.
You
but, have but, the but I will. Right. But when yeah. it when it comes to hearings, we can ask that at the hearings.
And even a quote slowdown was not a ordered slowdown.
Mm-hmm.
It was much more.
It's reality.
A realistic look at what would be needed and what would be spent in the coming year. And we ask the question, every year you tell us you're going to spend $1 billion. And every year at the end of the year, we feel good if we spent $750, $850.
No, I've seen that for the last four budget years.
Right.
Same thing with personnel.
Right.
There's always personnel numbers, and the question is, how many people can you hire?
Yeah. And one year we actually did, and the second year we did as well. But a realistic look at those capital spends was what freed up some money to do some things I think people would be happy with, but not at the expense of other things.
Okay.
Other standing rule for, were there any need to amend the capital budget in a true slowdown, it cannot be safety-related things that come off the table. We have to find a never-diminishing number of things, but things that can be deferred.
That's wonderful.
Is lighting considered a safety?
Yeah. I consider it a safety-related
okay.
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I did.
Yeah.
I would, too, but
yeah.
I don't have too much
and,
of a problem.
And then the last thing is something we talked about at our last meeting, and that is the reduction in some of the bus routes and the impact that that might have on Metro Access.
Yeah.
And I know you had tasked Mr. Kent to see how we can deal with that. I know there's going to be a survey done to see if there is any impact to Metro Access, But if it does impact one customer, five customers, or whatever, is there some way we can get around that? So I'll throw it over to you guys to discuss.
At this point, we might say that's largely moot, mm-hmm. in that we are not going down that route. But from a policy sense going forward, it still is a question we need to
address. Well, I looked at the routes in Maryland, and then we were in PG County, and same thing in Fairfax, and that's where we do have a lot of Metro Access people that need to get home from work.
So you're saying that
the Maryland routes are still on the on the agenda.
Yeah.
Most of the docketed service reductions or eliminations have been eliminated.
Right.
But it is still important. There are some service changes, particularly in Maryland, that will be on the docket. Mm-hmm. And it's important to have an analysis of the impact on access riders by the elimination of that service. And it's okay for you to ask us.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Introduce that.
How's the information? The work going on this to give us a sense of the policy.
When we spoke of this last, closer. There we go. When we spoke of this the last time, you had asked us to put out a board memo to describe the context of where the policy was, and we did that. And what we've committed to do is that before any kind of proposed changes to any of the routes are made, that we're going to do the check on the Metro Access customer impact in advance. And we've been able, through working with bus planning, to prevent really bringing anything forward to you that would have that kind of an impact. You know, one of the benefits of being in this area with so much pervasive bus service is that even if you take some stops away, there are other routes nearby that it doesn't mean that every time we make a change that it's going to reduce the service area. It has the potential.
But that has been looked at.
It has, absolutely. So, I mean, the practice right now is that every time that a fixed route bus route change is being considered, we do this type of check in advance and try to find a way to avoid having any impact.
Save some money, and at the same time, still provide service for the riders and the Metro Access riders. So you find that's not the case.
Yeah, the issue that was really raised is a somewhat technical but very important issue. The service territory for Metro Access is limited to a half-mile radius around existing service. The concern was if this existing service line were moved, the half-mile radius would move, and would we be freezing existing customers out of what they previously have been entitled to.
Yeah. My experience at the last two public hearings that I chaired were that an awful lot of access service users showed up for the hearing, and we had to tell them that they were not being impacted by any of the changes. It's really important that both WMATA and you help the community understand. I hate to have all of these people. I know how hard it is for a lot of these people to get to a hearing. And if they want to come, Godspeed to them. I want them there. But if there was a lot of disappointment that a number of people at the last hearing showed up and then were told that,
Oh, never mind.
And it's really important. Mm-hmm. And we're doing a disservice to our access community if we don't have clear impact statements out so that everybody can understand what the potential impact of these changes are before the hearing.
And I think, I also think that knowing what the timeline is and how we're going to look at this and the timeline before a change is made, even with the AAC, they were very concerned about this, and then knowing that this policy was in place and how it was going to work and who was going to talk to whom, I think has helped the AAC. But I agree, you're going to have people that will be concerned, and I think that's something that certainly we can do from our side, and so that people don't worry unnecessarily about where we stand.
Yeah, I think the process is understood, and we can lower the level of concern in all of our interests.
One of the things that would really lower the concern, everybody knows Title VI analysis and what's being done, but if we could make a statement that if it turns out that there are three little old men and three little old ladies that lose service to their church on a Saturday night because the bus doesn't run, that there can be internal accommodations made. And so if we do something as benign as, say, for small numbers of people that fall out of the Title VI net, that are living and using a service that is impacted by this bus, we can make arrangements. If we could say something like that, because, again, getting them to believe what we say, and Christian's shaking his head, in order to get them to believe what we say, we need to tell them, not that it's a, that's not a Title VI issue, because the problem is the complaints we get are generally from one person or five people or one apartment house. And so if we can say accommodations can be made, then that will...
Is that feasible? I mean, I cannot guarantee that every person who wants a trip anytime, night or day, 365 days a year,
I understand that.
Can be accommodated, but I think we have to really know if we're affecting somebody seriously and take that into account for whatever we propose in the way of changes.
I think following up on the last discussion where we talked about the policy broadly, the technical aspect is that when we make changes, like just as an example, during a given weekday, there's a part of the day where we have maximum deployment of services at the peak hour, and other parts of the day where some of those services are less. We erred on the side of the customer on Metro Access, where if a customer wants to travel within that three-quarter mile corridor at a time that is off-peak, for the purposes of the service area and the grandfathering, we treat the entire weekday as peak hour, so that we're not being that exacting with people to say, sorry, it's 7:05, and you know now the route is over and you can't go. So we didn't do that. Where we did make more of a distinction was on the weekend, just because the drop-off of service from weekday to weekend is more considerable, and we're very precise about the fixed route service needing to be operating in parallel at the time of the paratransit customer's request. So our thought was that as these situations come up, we've been discussing them with the AAC to say, all right, well, how often does this happen? You know, how much of an accommodation are we really talking about? Because, I mean, if it's really small, it's something that we could discuss. But any decision that we make on this obviously is precedent setting. And the weekend, actually, ridership of Metro Access has been growing. So, you know, because it's a service that's used, you know, not just for medical appointments or work trips, it's for all purposes. So we've had to be very careful about that. But that's something, our thought is we would continue to work with the AAC to see really what the impact is on the customer and whether we need to make a small, you know, technical tweak to the way we're handling that.
That's super. Thank you. I just got a note that we were going to remind you at the meeting, but we'll remind you now that Monday starts the recruiting phase for the new AAC members.
Oh, okay.
So just to let you know that we're going to...
Do you have people to suggest or people...
Well, we're asking you guys.
Yeah.
And we'll ask the full...
We're doing the same, but we'll certainly
to do that.
Your,
also, I see Jennifer there working on her phone, and she's the one that's going to have to set up the hearings. And we'll remind her, because she hasn't had to do it yet, that we're really nasty people, and you really ought to work with us to make sure that they are accessible. Because when you pick an
accessible... Jennifer and I have had that conversation.
Yeah. Because what has happened in the past... the locations have been accessible, except getting to them wasn't. And so we have a lot of people that live in the area that know PG County and know the district and can help out. So
I can actually address that just a little bit. Because of the PPP, we're actually going to you instead of making you come to us. There'll be one public hearing. It'll be in this building. And that way, it's the one. So if that's most convenient for people, that's great. But our goal really is to get back into the communities and go to where you are, because that's what we've been told. That's what people want. That's what our customers expect. And so through the PPP, hopefully, you won't have to come as far to all those hearings, and and we'll be accepting input through a variety of ways.
Got it.
So,
yeah, this is always
we've listened through the customer.
Yeah. Thank you.
Very good. Okay. Yeah, that will work. One of the things that, I think, you know, with the decision that has been made with respect to fares and fare increases, possible fare increases, I think that what you'll see is the community is going to be very pleased with the way things are going, and the fact that, you know, there shouldn't be a fare increase was something that I think that was on a lot of our minds and had really elevated the angst in the community. So,
I mean, it
that's
been
good.
On our minds as
oh,
well.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I've been to the hearings.
The board policy clearly was established every other year, and hopefully, and we'll know in a few minutes, we get a vote to go forward without that. We'll remind you, we'll be back next year, that we can't hold fares forever. It's not a good idea to hold fares forever, but at least we can hold them for the year that we promised to hold them.
Next month's board report will give you some very interesting information on the reduction in peak fare for Metro Access as to the effect it's had on ridership and also the effect on the fares. As sort of a preview, there's still a bimodal distribution. Between the lowest fares and the highest fares. The highest fares have been reduced by 50 cents. The lowest fares have been increased by 50 cents. And so there's been a compression. Well, that's what everybody had asked, if you remember. At about where it is, because I think the mean fare now is about 459, and I think the request that we had made was 450 for the flat fare.
And one of the things that's come up in some of the discussions on the subcommittee level is, I think we've got, what, a 92% on-time performance? So the 8% that we're missing, who is it? Why is it happening? How many rides are we talking about? That sort of thing. It might be interesting for us to take a look at that 8% and figure out what can we do to improve that statistic. I don't know what that 8% represents.
Do we have the data to know who didn't ride and why?
Well, I you're speaking of lateness, right,
yeah.
of the 8%
yeah.
of people that
right.
we pick up late.
Right.
Well, I mean, aside from the fact that it is the most congested region in the country, and by many measures, you know, we compete with the same traffic that the buses do. You know, there are a lot of things that get in our way. It's also a shared ride system. So if the customer before you takes a little longer with boarding or deboarding, or if we have to locate the customer, it has an effect on subsequent trips. So what we do in Metro Access is we try as best we can to proactively move subsequent trips in advance to prevent the lateness. And because of those efforts, that's why it's as good as 92%. You know, I think otherwise, I think we would have a much more difficult time achieving that result. And you know, certainly from a national perspective, it's a pretty high score as paratransit goes.
When a particular trip gets delayed, are we able to communicate to the next customer on that trip what the delay might be?
Actually, one of the things that happens is there's rescheduling of trips. So we're not allowed to use the word add-on anymore.
No real-time information.
Yeah, we're not allowed to use add-on anymore, but what happens if one is really late, somebody else in a different location will pick up that ride from the one that was supposed to pick it up.
What we're presently doing is communicating with the next driver and trying to find someone who's closer to pick up that trip so they're just simply not late. But communicating with the customer is something we want to do better. That's the mobile app we've been talking about that the AAC's asked us to develop, and that's still that's well, it's still actually in the works. One of the reasons why we didn't roll it out sooner is because, you know, sometimes it's easier to actually put an app on a phone before the back end is ready, and it wouldn't be good if we put an app that they touched and it gave them an inaccurate ETA. So we're having to build, you know, both ends of this feature, but that's what we are working on.
Not to steal the RAC's thunder on this, but a discussion that we've had with the RAC is, I don't know that there are any apps out there with WMATA branding on them. We use different apps for different that are all developed by third parties.
No, we have a WMATA.
Do we have
there is a WMATA one. But
there is a,
one, it's not
one,
as good.
One of my learning experiences over the 4 years, 5 years that I've been here, and it's true around the country, third parties are much more nimble and flexible at developing apps. If you look at my iPhone, I've got about 8 apps for transit around the country, and they're all third-party.
All third-party.
And they all work well, reasonably well.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a very tough decision at this board level to hammer the staff to make the information available. We don't want anybody to have that information.
Mm-hmm.
We said, no, information needs to be free and let people do what they will with it. And the marketplace will sort out those that work and those that don't work. So be careful what you ask for.
Yeah.
If you want a WMATA app, you might get one.
Yeah.
No, I have one, but I always use NextBus.
Yeah.
It's much
right. Well, NextBus is at least WMATA sponsored, but there are also some other third-party apps that are quite good.
Yeah. Christian, do any transit organizations in the country have the kind of app that you're looking for already?
More for fixed route than paratransit, for fixed route services. You know, paratransit, you know, we've really had to design it as we go. So what we're building, you know, inevitably what happens here, especially with Trapeze, for paratransit, we build something for the Metro Access customers and then they go sell it elsewhere. But it usually happens here first. So this will be another innovation that we're planning to add, but we're having to develop it custom because it's not out there. We've participated with APTA on developing industry standards for performance. We've shared best practices, but in terms of actually developing something that everybody would plug into, no.
Just as a means of comparison, we have a paratransit system at Department of Veterans Affairs for working with disabled veterans to get them to hospital appointments and that sort of thing. And what we see with Trapeze, or at least what I've seen with Trapeze, far outstrips what RouteMatch has done for the VA. And so I've been fighting with respect to RouteMatch and what they can deliver. And Trapeze is just so far ahead of what they've done.
Glad to hear that.
Yep.
We got another few minutes.
Yeah, is there anything we can do for you? I mean, you're great. You just listen to me babble on for a half hour, so why don't we listen to you guys, what we can do to help you out.
Yeah, and again, most of the items that are on this agenda have been made moot, and I'm very happy that they have been made moot. Some of them will come back from time to time, but I think we're working together well, and we appreciate all the advice we get, Mr. Downs.
One of the issues I think that we need to jointly address is the continuation of the rapid growth in access ridership. We know that we can't control that with pricing. We know that part of the solution is route accessibility on that regular bus route.
Bus stops and
roadways and sidewalks and all of that as a region. It's not clear what our options are about how we manage this kind of growth, which got us into a dilemma before. If we used pricing at that point to try and control it, I don't think that's a viable option anymore. We need to begin to have conversations with the authority and you all about how we begin that planning process to start to address this and the analytics to build behind understanding what's driving the increase in ridership. It's the, one of the fastest.
So we're all getting older. That's what.
Yeah,
it's true.
But I'm wondering. Yeah, I'm wondering if the increase in ridership, the number of people that are eligible, whether that correlates to the number of rides that we're getting every month.
No.
Or whether we're seeing the increase in ridership and then people are using the fixed route system free because of that.
Well, one of the other things, Mr. Kent will present it when he gives you the taxi update.
Right.
But one of the problems with the taxis in D.C. is a $5 taxi ride to your dialysis facility sounds really good, but a lot of the D.C. people only pay $3 on Metro Access. And so they're not taking advantage of the taxi. And one of the things might consider is if they use the taxi, give them a $2 discount on their next Metro Access ride. would be like a free ride on the metro, because that would get them to use the taxis, which are less expensive for WMATA, and they would get the benefit of not having to pay $2 more than it would if they took metro access. But that's one of the inputs that I've gotten from the people in the district and PG County, that some of them are close enough to the dialysis facility. It's only a $3 or $3.50 ride, and so they'd rather take metro access than take the taxi. So that's something that you might consider.
The planning for the discussion together is better than stumbling into that discussion in the midst of a budget.
Oh, yeah. Yes, yes.
Well, but we in the last summer, we agreed, we directed, was it staff to produce a report?
You did. You did. So at your customer service and ops committee meeting on March 12th, I will come back and present the preliminary findings from the long-term sustainability study that you asked us to do. And, you know, we have had some conversations before. I know the board's feeling is very strong that we've not given sufficient visibility into really where the growth has been coming from. And, you know, we've taken the ball a lot further down the field to explain that. But what we really are trying to get at is that there's a list of solutions, of which that taxi pilot is one. We're working with the district on making the pricing more conducive for more ridership, but we have already had 3,000 people take advantage of it, and more are wanting to get on. So I think it's going to be a combination of approaches, and we're going to present that to you on the 12th.
Along with continuation of things we've done before, like travel training. And
that's right. That's right. So the list is going to be inclusive of the things we've started and the things that we have yet to do. And, you know, I think it's going to be an interesting combination of operational approaches and policy stances and frankly, you know, the regional coordination element of all the jurisdictions kind of comparing and contrasting what works for them in their individual operating environments. So it's going to be all of that.
March 12th.
Move, adjourn. I don't want